Hey everyone, welcome to the Voices in Japan podcast with your hosts, as always, Ben and Burke. On today's show, we talk about the Go To Travel campaign that the Japanese government has introduced to encourage domestic travel and help boost local businesses due to the COVID pandemic. The Japanese government will provide subsidies of up to 50% on costs for hotels, transportation, restaurant shopping, and tourist attractions all within Japan. Other things we talk about on the show are butchered English slogans, just like Go To Travel. Burke taking advantage of the campaign during a long 4-day weekend at the end of July, which was initially created to celebrate the 2020 Olympics, but we all know how that went down. Still, they kept the holiday, which was nice of them. We also talk about Tokyo being excluded from the campaign, Iwate Prefecture angry about outsiders visiting, my favorite places to travel in Hokkaido, Burke's experience of hiking Mount Fuji, and much, much more. All right, enjoy the show.
1, 2, 3.
Go To Travel, man. First of all, I just want to say that I don't like the name of this campaign, because you know how good the Japanese are at just butchering English when it comes to slogans for campaigns like this. Like Go To Travel already, that's, you know, grammatically incorrect, and I'm a bit of a stickler for grammar.
Just like you said, it is like a bit of a weird name. I remember I was at a company and like they always came up with like these slogans to help like motivate the salespeople and everything. And they would just be the strangest names of, you know, like Blue Power or something, just really strange names. But there's like this really important meeting, and they're going to hold like these series of meetings around the country, and they needed something to call like the theme of the meeting.
Hold on, is this you talking about like your previous company that you're working for?
Yeah, I won't say which company, but it was a company in the past, yes.
So most of these slogans, like in your experience, are those people that are coming up with those slogans, are they Japanese people, or are they getting some kind of feedback from, you know, a Westerner or an English speaker at least?
Usually, I mean, and usually always it's Japanese people, and probably about 10% of the time they're getting feedback from a native English speaker. If it's a real important one, they do, but for some reason they didn't ask about this one. And the theme and the name that they gave to like all these important series of meetings that were going to take place was just The Meeting.
That was the theme of the meeting.
Yeah, so like whenever it came up, like in all these like business discussions, everyone just kept calling it "the meeting good," "the meeting good." But yeah, it is kind of like the go-to travel campaign.
Yeah, another good example of that is like Hitachi's slogan is "inspire the next," and it's like inspire the next what? You know what I mean? And that's like, you know, Hitachi's one of the biggest companies in Japan, and I see their commercial on TV all the time. I'm just like, why didn't you just ask someone who knows English how to, you know, come up with a better slogan? So go to travel, where did you go to travel, Burke? You've actually used this campaign, right? You were saying to me earlier.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is last weekend was a 4-day weekend because it was originally supposed to coincide with the start of the Olympics that would be going on right now. So they had like the long weekend planned out for that. And so we had this long 4-day weekend, and we were like, man, we got to take advantage of this. Japanese government gave some money also for people to make it through the whole pandemic and everything. And we decided to book some nice onsen in Otaru that I never knew about. Whenever you think about going to a good onsen spot in around Sapporo, you think of Jozanke or Noboribetsu or something. But I'd been seeing these articles about these nice onsen in Otaru. So yeah, we decided to take advantage of a little bit of that government money that was distributed, plus this go-to campaign. And we booked one night at two different onsen. One is called Ginrinso Onsen in Otaru. It's kind of up on the mountain. And the second place was right down on the canal, a place called Furukawa. Both of those places are considered to be like two of the top onsen in Otaru.
Nice. We actually stayed in an onsen in Otaru not too long ago, maybe about, yeah, probably about a month ago as well. One right next to the canal. I think it was called, can't remember the exact name. I think it's called like Sona or something. It was like right opposite the Otaru beer factory.
Is that one kind of like a white building?
It's like a big gray building, but I think it was close to Furukawa, the one that you stayed at. Yeah, that was more of a traditional style one, like the one where you stayed at, where Sona was more of like a modern looking one. It seemed quite new, or it just been remodeled or something like that. But yours, I think Furukawa one's quite small, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think Furukawa has a total of like 40 rooms, but it is smaller. Just like you said, this kind of more traditional inside, everything's made out of wood. We actually got a room that had a private onsen in the room, cedar. It was made out of cedar, so it was really nice and relaxing. But I'll be honest, like out of the two places, I really liked the other place, Ginrinso, which is like up on the mountain. It only has, I think they said 17 rooms in like the whole place. So it feels like really private. It used to actually be like this old rich fisherman owned this property and he built this place. And now they use it as an onsen. But it had a much more private feeling. Like they took really good care of you. They've converted rooms into like restaurants. And so we have like a really nice meal there. And yeah, it was just a much more relaxing time, which is kind of what you want at an onsen. You want to be able to just relax, and you can like drive into the city or take a taxi into the city if you want to enjoy Otaru. But Furukawa like is right on the canal, just like that place where you guys stayed. But Otaru itself was really good too, because there was hardly any you know, tourists in town. I know that may or may not be good for businesses in the area, but yeah, it was a really good feel. It was still crowded because we had like awesome weather over the weekend.
Did you book your trip for this go-to travel campaign pretty early? Because apparently I was reading the campaign kicked off at like 22nd of July to August 31st. But during that time, those dates is when you can, I'm not 100% sure, but that is the only time you can start booking. Is that right? To claim money back. So from 22nd of July to 31st, travelers can receive 35% discount on their travel expenses. And then from September 1st, then they can receive another 15% back in the form of vouchers. So you can't get like the whole 50% cost of your trip, which is what the campaign is offering straight away. But also they were saying that like if you booked your trip before 22nd of July, or I'm not sure exactly, but you weren't eligible to get money back. So it depends when you actually book the trip.
Yeah, I think as they said that just like you were mentioning, if you book through participating travel agencies after the 22nd or when it started showing up, I think it was actually on the 24th, then yeah, you get 35% off the travel expenses. And then just like you said, after September 1st, you start to receive up to 50% of your trip in vouchers to use at local businesses, at the vacation, at the spots where you visit. But there's a lot of small rules and stuff. Like for hours, if you booked directly with the hotel during a certain period and did not go through a travel agency, then you can also claim back up to 35% of your travel expenses through the campaign. But there's actually a cap. For day trips, you can only receive up to Ichiman per day. And for overnight, you can only receive up to Nimon or 20,000 of your lodging expenses. So there's a cap, and it's up to those amounts, or 35% of your trip if it was less than $1,000.
Is that per person?
Well, actually, to be honest, yeah, that's the part we don't know specifically, but we think it's of the total trip. It's not per person because then you may need to submit separate claims for each person. So I don't think it's per person. I think it's per trip, actually, or per booking, yeah.
Yeah, and you booked this one direct through the hotel. Was that through a travel agency?
Yeah, we did both of them directly. And the second place, Furukawa down on the canal, was a little bit less expensive than the first place. But we did them both directly. So yeah, they were expensive places, but again, we used some of that government support money because we want to put it back in the economy. And then also, yeah, we get through the GoTo travel campaign, we get some money back as well.
Did you know that family travel has the incredible power to shape our children's worldview and create lasting memories? In a world where representation is often lacking, it's essential for our children to see themselves reflected in every aspect of life, including the stories we tell about travel. Introducing the Travel of Legacy podcast, where we're rewriting the script by celebrating the diverse voices of Black and Brown family travelers. Each episode of Travel of Legacy is a testament to the enriching power and the joy of exploration in Black and Brown communities. So journey with us and subscribe now.
Yeah, there was a bit of a controversy as well, just because they announced, I think it was like a day before the campaign kicked off, that Tokyo was going to be excluded from the places that you could get discounts from, like travelers going to and from Tokyo. So a lot of people who had already booked their trips, they weren't going to be able to get any refunds back as well.
Yeah, the people that are either traveling out from Tokyo or people that were trying to use the campaign to book into Tokyo. And again, that's because they're having the jump, so to speak, and infections in Tokyo.
Yeah, I found like an article online about a couple that was going to Okinawa, or they did plan a trip, and then they found out that Tokyo was excluded, so they weren't going to be able to receive that discount anymore. Yet they just decided to go anyway because it was kind of making up for their cancelled honeymoon that they were supposed to have due to coronavirus. So I think a lot of people from Tokyo had situations like that. But yeah, and then there was a female office worker in Tokyo who was going to go to Hokkaido for a three-day trip that she reserved in June. But then she decided to go anyway because the cancellation fees aren't going to come back. And there was other kind of complaints about those kind of situations where people aren't getting their money back.
Yeah, actually, I think in most cases, they're going to refund. The government's going to work directly to refund those costs. I think there are certain limited cases where people aren't going to get their money back, but I think they're actually trying to have the government cover most of those. But just like you said, there are a lot of people that are against the campaign. I think they said like 74% of people or something in Japan Times that were saying that they don't think the campaign should take place because people are worried about the coronavirus and it's spreading. But a lot of other places like Nara Prefecture, like they were saying, you know, times have changed now and people have actually learned how to live with the virus. So there's you're only hurting people even more by, you know, canceling or leaving, excluding Tokyo from the benefits of the campaign. But I mean, there's actually pretty crazy stuff like going on about people not wanting outsiders to come in to their prefectures, like Iwate Prefecture. It might be the only place still in Japan has not had any coronavirus cases yet, infections. And they have a lot of signs up in local businesses saying that they will not serve people from outside of the prefecture.
Oh, that's crazy. So they're going to like ask for ID or something, or ask where people are from before they let them in?
Yeah, well, it's actually, I think that's probably what they're going to do, but it's gotten a lot worse than that. Like in this city called Kitakami, there was a woman in May. She lives in Iwate, but she has, her car has Tokyo license plates, and she had a gang of people like run up on her car and tell her that she needs to leave and she shouldn't be there.
Wow. And,
so she's like stopped driving her car with the license plate. She only rides her bicycle. There was another man who, I don't know if this is true or not, but this is supposedly in the Mainichi Shimbun, like a 70-year-old guy from Tokyo who had moved to Iwate. But he got a cold shoulder from all of his neighbors when he moved there in April. And so he eventually decided to move to a new apartment still in Iwate. And I don't know if this is true or not, but it said that the fire broke out in the building next to his, and his building burnt down with him inside of it. And apparently, nobody rushed in to help them. And they're trying to say maybe it's because he was out of town or something. I don't know if that's a true story or not, but it was in the Japan Times and in the opinion section quoting the Mainichi Shimbun. So yeah, a lot of people are actually pretty worried about it. I mean, you know, we're so happy to be able to use it and go out on our vacation here in Hokkaido and everything. But, you know, for some people, this is a very, very big issue.
Mm. Are you going to use it again to travel around other places of Japan? Because we were thinking about using it, but only to travel around Hokkaido. Because my family's worried about moving around Japan. Like trying to keep it within Hokkaido is not so bad, but moving, because I was thinking of going to like Okinawa or something, because I've never been there before. But then the missus was just like, Okinawa is going to be packed. Like that's where everyone's going to want to go. And especially to use the government funding or how much they're going to reimburse us with. So she said that she would rather not travel abroad or outside of Hokkaido, just stay within Hokkaido. So we're looking at trying to use it within there. But like you said, you kind of, it's only for certain companies or hotels and travel agencies that are actually participating in the campaign, right? So it's not like everything.
Right. And I think just like you said, like some prefectures or, and Hokkaido is one of them, they're encouraging only travel within the prefecture or just to neighboring prefectures, if the neighboring prefectures are also okay with it. Mm. But I mean, we do have Obon break coming up, summer break, in a few weeks here in Japan. Usually people get like at least 3 days off or up to a week from work. We have that coming up. So we are kind of thinking that we want to use it again. But just like you, we'll probably only travel within Hokkaido. Were you guys able to go out and enjoy this 4-day weekend anyways, doing something?
Yeah, else? Well, we initially we were planning to go camping, but me being me, I always leave things to the last minute. So we were trying to book a campsite like 2 days before the long weekend was going to start, and unexpectedly everywhere was like completely booked. So we didn't go camping, but we ended up going to one of the beaches, Ranshima Beach. You know Ranshima right. Beach, but we used to go there a lot back in the day. Mm. We used to do like an annual trip out there.
Yeah.
Which for me, I think Ranshima Beach is one of the nicest beaches in Hokkaido. I mean, the beaches aren't well known, or Hokkaido isn't known for having like beautiful beaches, but Ranshima is pretty good. Like it's not golden sand, it's yellow sand, and it's like in a cove, so there's trees and mountains everywhere, and it's kind of a distance away from the main road, so you don't hear any cars. There's not much infrastructure around, just a couple of a few beach huts that sell food, and there's some restaurants, but it's really kind of tranquil around there, which I was very surprised about when I first went there. The water's really clear, it's clean, but it was pretty busy. I mean, I remember when we used to go, probably about like 5 or 6 years ago, it was never that busy in the summer. Like it was busy enough, but it wasn't like packed. And when we went, it was packed. It was just like tents everywhere and people barbecuing everywhere. But it was nice. I mean, we had a great time. Weather was good. We bought a new grill that we used for the first time. Nice. Stayed there for a few hours. It's only like, I think it was about an hour and a half drive from Sapporo. Traffic wasn't too bad. So yeah, that's what we did one of the days. And then the other days, we kind of just went to the local shopping malls and walked around, but nothing nothing too strenuous, just very, very relaxed.
Yeah, Ranshima is really good. It's a little bit further away from Sapporo than maybe a couple of the other beaches, but it's definitely a lot nicer than those other beaches that are closer. I think on the train, it takes like, because you have to go past Otaru from Sapporo, so it takes like, maybe the train also takes about an hour and a half or something. So actually, I don't know which is faster, the car or the train. It seems like the car would be.
Yeah, I remember going by train. We had to transfer. I think it's transferring at Otaru, and there was a little bit of a wait, and so that kind of made it a little bit longer. And also, coming back, there wasn't that many trains, so you had to kind of limit your time there. But it was it's a lot more, a lot less stress when you're taking the train, because you can just relax, and it's very close to the beach. It's walking distance. It's like a 10-minute walk from Ranshima train station.
Yeah, was anybody like wearing masks and stuff on the beach?
Actually, no one was wearing a mask. Yeah, like we got down there and we were the only people wearing masks when we got onto the beach. So I think once everyone got onto the beach, they just took their masks off.
Yeah, I would be surprised, I guess. Actually, I don't know. I might be surprised that people are wearing masks, just because like you do feel like you get pretty hot wearing the mask and everything. Yeah. Plus you're outdoors.
Yeah, and everyone's like swimming and stuff too. You can't swim with a mask on, I guess. I haven't seen that yet. I'm sure that might be the next thing, waterproof masks.
That'd be great, man.
Yeah.
And we have like amazing weather. I think it rained like a little bit the first couple of days or something. But
wait, the forecast was kind of, you know, it was looking bleak. It was like cloudy and there was like thunder and lightning forecast in the weather. But the forecast was completely wrong, man. It's like today is, you know, beautiful weather. It's a little bit windy, but the sun's out. You know, it's hot. It's like 29, 28 degrees or something today.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to think about, because not only would the Olympics be going on right now, but man, we'd be like right smack in the middle of beer garden season.
Oh, man, you know what's happening in beer garden? They're doing a special one block beer garden instead of the whole park. I think it's block 8 or something like that, but you have to make a reservation to join, and I'm not sure when it starts. It might be the end of July. Like July 31st or something like that. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I remember. I did hear a little bit of something about it. I'm tempted to look at it just because I miss beer garden so much, but I almost don't want to look at it because I don't want to see something disappointing, you know, like just reminding me of that it's not beer garden.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few different like small beer gardens around the city too. There's one like, you know, in front of Daimaru.
Yeah.
Big, yeah.
And yeah. And the one on the roofs, rooftops, I think Parco have one. I think all the usual ones are still going. It's just the main Odori Park beer garden that's not on.
Right.
So. But I haven't been to any yet. I haven't been to any beer gardens yet. I want to check out some, but as long as it's not too crowded, because I don't really want to be among too many people. I'm still trying to social distance. I mean, I'm not as worried as before, but it's, you know, it's always better to take precautions.
Yeah, it's hard to, no, I mean, they are saying, you know, that's unfortunately where a lot of the infections are being reported from are the nightlife type places, bars, especially in Tokyo. There are a lot of problems in Kabukicho. But they actually just said a few days ago they had their first infection at like the Sapporo Beer Factory restaurant place.
Oh no. Haven't you been going there a lot recently?
I haven't been there recently. I think I took some friends there earlier this year, but no, been there a lot recently. But yeah, so yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. There's people on both sides of the opinions and everything. So just depends on, I guess, who you talk to, but.
Let's move on to our some favorite places or some trips that we've been on. It doesn't have to be Hokkaido, could be Japan. I mean, I haven't traveled to too many places in Japan, so but yeah, my favorite place I've been have pretty much been in Hokkaido. Yeah, I think I've probably mentioned some of these places before, but definitely Naboribetsu Onsen is one of my favorite places. I try to go there at least once or twice a year. And yeah, what I really like about Naboribetsu Onsen is just it feels like a real traditional onsen village or town. Like when you're there, everything around you is onsen, right? It's just like all these onsen hotels. And then there's like a walking trail with a Hell Valley where you can see like smoke coming out of the ground. And yeah, there's like the big giant ogre statues, which are the mascots of Naboribetsu. And yeah, what I really like about that place is, you know, everyone kind of dresses up in their yukata from the onsen, and then they just go out into the town and just walk around and, you know, go to the shops, go to eat ramen or something at nighttime, and they're all wearing like yukata. So it kind of feels like you're back in like the Edo period or something. So that's what I really like about that. And it's a very unique place. Like, you don't get that feel in somewhere like Josanke Onsen, for example.
Have you been to Naboribetsu during different seasons?
I've only been in spring and autumn. So I've never been in winter, actually. I think that would be quite a good experience.
That was kind of the good thing about that first place we stayed at last weekend, Ginrinzo, is because it's kind of up on the mountain. It's within nature. So you do feel like more of the kind of get the onsen feeling, but definitely there's not a lot more onsen around like in Naboribetsu, so it doesn't feel like a village too much.
Yeah. And another favorite place of mine, which you also like, Burke, is obviously Toya Lake, Toyako, but especially staying at our friends' places, because we have some friends that have places in Toyako. And you went there recently, Burke, I heard. And I just love going there because, you know, for barbecues and there's nature and swimming in the lake. I went, I think it was last weekend, actually. Yeah, and I went for a swim in the lake for the first time this year. And it was beautiful. It was like just the right temperature, not too cold, clean. And I think we went to the same spot that you went to as well, Burke. And one of our friends was saying that you didn't have any you didn't have any kind of shoes to go into the lake because it's like all covered in rocks. So yeah, you're basically on all of your fours in pain trying to crawl out like an old granny or something. And my friend was just telling me that story and it just made him laugh a lot.
He may think I look like an old granny. I prefer to think I look like a tiger kind of walking on all fours, prowling into the water.
But I can imagine that because I remember the first time I went there and I didn't have any shoes as well to go in, and I was exactly the same way. Like, it's pretty painful, those rocks, if you don't have some kind of footwear to go in.
Yeah, I definitely will be prepared next time to either have like sandals or aqua socks or something. I mean, I was kind of thinking that I needed to bring sandals, but I thought, yeah, it's like walking on big pointed rocks. It doesn't work too well.
Yeah, I got given the warning after your attempt of wading in there. So right. make sure you bring some sandals, because what happened to Burke there week before?
Yeah, I mean, that is a really beautiful area. It's Caldera Lake, so former volcano or active volcano, I guess, I'm not sure, but it's conveniently located close to Chitose, close to Rusutsu, close to other places. So definitely a favorite place of mine going forward too.
Are you was that your first time you went out there to visit those guys?
Yeah, just because usually it's hard to kind of tell my wife, you know, I'm going to take off for the weekend. We have the young kid at home. But yeah, I mean, I think I've been out there before, like a long time ago, over 10 years ago, with some Japanese people that took me out there just to see it. But I didn't really have time to go around the lake and enjoy everything. So
Yeah, it makes a difference when you can stay over and when you're so close as well.
Yeah.
Like having a fire in the evening and barbecuing. Also staying in Shakotan is a good place to go as well, which is the west of Hokkaido, kind of northwest of Sapporo, which is a bit further out. I think it's like a 2.5 hour drive, but Shakotan is beautiful. That has like the most cleanest, clearest water that I've seen in like my whole life. Like where everywhere that I've been around the world, it's like the best water I've swam in. And just because, you know, it's not really a beach area, so there's no sand, it's all like rocks and caves. That's why the water's so clear. But camping there, usually we do like a yearly camping trip to Shackleton, and that's always a good time as well. Just you know, going to a campsite, barbecuing, hanging out for a couple of days. So those are my kind of favorite places in Hokkaido to go to. But I still haven't been east of Hokkaido yet. There's that's Shiretoko, which is very, very famous. But that's a good kind of 3-day trip just to get out there. So you need at least a week to fully appreciate it. And most people in Japan don't really have a week off unless it's in the summer holiday or the winter holiday. Yeah, but hopefully that's definitely on my agenda to head out east sometime.
Yeah, I think you can fly out to some of the airports out there, get out there much quicker. But if you drive, yeah, it definitely takes at least like a full drive of leaving early in the morning, arriving late at night to make it all the way out there. One day.
So what about you? What places have you enjoyed so far in Japan?
Well, just like you, there's a lot more places that I want to go. I always mention like going down to Kyushu. I've been to Kyushu before, but there are a lot more places I want to go there. But just for this, thinking about something for this episode, I was actually thinking about the time we climbed. Well, my friends and I climbed Mount Fuji. Because I think Merrick brought it up in the Hacking Tokyo podcast that he had mentioned that they had done a little bit of the hiking of Mount Fuji, but it's kind of a bit of a cheesy experience because it's not like real mountain climbing. In fact, it's more like hiking. It's kind of embarrassing to talk about, you know, so soon after having Ito on the podcast talking about his backpacking through like 60 countries or whatever, 65 countries.
So it's not a difficult hike to do Fuji.
No, it's not at all. There's a clear path all the way up to the top. I think they say there's like 5 different spots. So it's basically like 10 levels. The mountain is divided into 10 levels, and most people start the hike from the 5th level. And they have at the 5th level, there's actually I think 5 different spots where you can start climbing, but there's one really, really popular famous spot. I think it's called the Fuji Subaru station, and no, it's not like it's nothing like real backpacking or mountain climbing.
So you don't need like proper hiking gear or anything to do it.
Well, you definitely need proper shoes, and it helps to have like a walking stick, and they sell walking sticks like at those stations and everything. But you don't need like climbing gear, definitely none of that. And you know, there's like thousands of people that climb during the season, which is like July through August is the main part of the season. And in fact, like the day that we showed up, there was probably like close to 1,000 or over 1,000 people there just at that station. Cause you can take buses from like Tokyo and you can actually take trains, a certain ways out and then take buses as well, but you take the bus like all the way up to that spot, and it's like kind of like a tourist location. There's like a bunch of restaurants, and there might even be like a hotel there or something, and literally there's like dozens of buses showing up with people that are going to start climbing, and these are all people that are going to start climbing at midnight. I think it's 11 p.m or at midnight you start climbing, because it takes like between 5 to 7 hours to get to the summit at a good pace so that you can see the sun rising, because the sun comes up at like 4:30 or something, 4 o'clock. So maybe you are supposed to, I mean, not everybody makes it up to the summit to see the sunrise. And a lot of people like, there's mountain huts at each of the locations beyond 5 as well. It's like a 6, 7, and 8. There's several mountain huts along the way that people stay overnight. So you can kind of make it a multi-day experience of climbing. But the thing is we got there, and we wanted to be the first people to the top. and I might have mentioned this before, so we like made sure that as soon as they let people start climbing, like we made sure we were the first people to start out. And the problem is at this very popular spot, Fujisubara, there's the Yoshida Trail, which goes to the top, and there's the Ochido Trail. That's like just a regular hiking trail. It's like 5 kilometers. And we started off and we're like walking, walking, walking. Like 40 minutes later, we're like, this trail doesn't seem like it's going up at all. And I think we even came to the end of like the trail. It was like 5 kilometers. And we realized that it was the wrong trail. So we had to double back. And so we get back to the starting point. And now not only, you know, are we not going to be like at the front of the line, but we're at the very, very back of the line of all the people that started climbing. So,
and can you overtake people, or is it like you have to go in single file or something like that?
Or yeah, there's some spots where you can overtake people, and there's some spots where you have to go single file. But like, so what happened is the group that I went with, like, a lot of the people, in fact, all of them, they went out like partying the night before, like karaoke and everything in Tokyo. Because some of the guys are even from overseas. And so like they were all hungover the next day. I mean, we didn't start climbing till that night, but they were all in like pretty bad shape. And back, like after we climbed like to the from fifth to the sixth spot, like one young lady that was climbing with us like dropped out immediately. And she was like, she was done. And so I was sitting there like climbing with all these other guys, but again, they were like not, they're all feeling pretty sick. So finally they were just like, you can go ahead, you can go ahead. And so I just like started charging up the mountain, and I had to pass like hundreds of people along the way. I was like determined to get to the sunrise, you know, when the sun came up. And at every location I came to, I was like, which spot am I at? They're like, oh, you're at number 7. I'm like, which spot I was at? And like finally, after just like rushing and like going past like hundreds and hundreds of people, I was like dead tired. And I'm like thinking like how many, I thought I had like one more spot to climb up, and the people there were all like, no, no, you've made it. You've made it to the top. You're here at the top. But it was like pitch black. It's like winter weather at the top. So everyone's like kind of huddled up and like covered up in their coats and everything. But I didn't make it to see the sunrise. So after all of that.
Yeah. But none of the other group made it.
Yeah, they didn't make it for the top to the sunrise. But that's the good thing about that the trail, the Yoshida Trail, is you can actually, and that's why it's the most popular, is because you can see the sunrise from any location along the trail.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and it's actually pretty crazy because when the sun comes up, and you're if you're at the top, there's actually like restaurants at the top and everything. But they start playing Kimigayo, the national anthem for Japan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, when the sun's coming up?
Yeah, and like everybody, it's pretty surreal because like everybody gets quiet and like faces and turns and faces the sun. Wow. And then like you look down the mountain and there's like this trail of like hundreds of people going down, and the whole thing stops.
And everyone, well, you mean the trail, like everyone stops climbing?
Yeah, because like when the sun rises, everyone like stops climbing, like turns towards the sun.
Wow.
So it's pretty weird. Like, yeah.
It had, sounds like, pretty amazing, actually. Yeah. Yeah. It's experience.
Yeah, I had like Kimigayo like playing in the background, the national anthem of Japan. I'm like looking down and like seeing like all these people stopping and paying homage to like the sunrise. It was kind of like a little bit religious or something, you know.
Mm. So you recommend doing it at least once. People always say, you know, they would do it once but never again, just because of how busy it is and how slow you kind of have to go.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend doing it once. It's like one of those things to do in Japan that you can say that you did. I would not recommend it if you think you're going to go like on a serious like backpacking trip, like up a mountain in Japan. There's nothing like that. But I would definitely recommend it once. You've never done it before?
Never done it. I've never done it. I've thought about it, but I kind of like, you know, like proper hikes where there's not too many people around and I can go at my own pace. Like I don't want to be held up by other people just because, you know, there's too many, and I don't want to be like in single file because it takes a long time, right? It takes like, what, 5 or 6 hours, you were saying?
Yeah, I think from that spot, it's the average is like 5 to 7 hours. But I mean, that was the other strange thing, is because, like, you know, we went the wrong way and then came back and then started climbing, and I was being slowed down by like all these people that were in front of me too. But I must have climbed that thing in like close to record time, man, like 4 hours or something, because I was like determined to get there to the top. But yeah.
What about coming down? Was coming down just as kind of tedious, where you had to go in single file? Was it a bit? Is there a quicker way down?
No, so you go down a separate path, and that one is almost like a road. It's not like paved or anything, but it's like a really thick, like gravelly, rocky type place, and you can just like fly down that. Like, it only took us like 3.5 hours to get down. Like everybody in our group. Yeah. So it takes a lot less time, and it was like a beautiful day coming down. You can see like the valley and everything all the way out to the ocean. So it's I would definitely recommend it at least once.
All right, maybe I'll do that. One summertime, right, is the time to do it.
Yeah, I mean, and it's pretty crazy. Like this year, it's all shut down because of coronavirus. I'm sure there's some people probably climbing it anyways, but there's only like 2 months, and you're not supposed to do it outside of 2 months. There's like a tragic story of a guy who fell off, actually, I think last year or a few years ago, within the last few years. He was actually like videotaping with his GoPro camera.
And oh, man.
He like slipped, and the video is like out there.
Oh, no.
So definitely make sure that you climb during season.
Okay. And the season is what, July to September or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That'll be on my list of things to do in Japan. I mean, I've been there nearly 13 years and I still haven't considered doing it. But after hearing that story, I think I might go now.
Yeah. Just make sure you choose the right path.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think we're coming up to about that time. We've been recording for a while, but just listeners, if you enjoy the show, if you enjoy hearing Burke and I talk about our experiences, you can support us by leaving a donation, if you like, by clicking the link in the show notes. Or what would really help us is if you left us a review and a rating, especially on Apple Podcasts/iTunes, and that will help potential listeners to click on us. So that would help us out a lot. And also, if you wanted to start a podcast yourselves, you think it's a easy thing to do. I mean, a lot of people are starting podcasts these days. You can click on our affiliate link. We use Buzzsprout as our podcast hosting site. And they're really good. So yeah, if you want to do that, click on that link as well, also in the show notes.
Yeah, and also we've been having a lot of interesting people, opportunity and privilege to talk to a lot of interesting people on the show. So if you'd like to be a guest on the show, please reach out and let us know.
All right. Thanks for joining us again, everyone, and catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.